Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox. Welcome to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. I'm your go-to girl for people, ideas, knowledge, inspiration, faith, love, truth, success, and of course, F-U-N. Your hustle's going to get an upgrade with the most surprising, exciting, and fabulous guests from all walks of life. You're in good hands, darlings. Okay, so we're gonna get down to business today with the beautiful and talented actress and producer, Saniqua Martin Green. Saniqua is best known as Sasha Williams on The Walking Dead, where she hustled and kicked a whole lot of butt. You also have seen her on The Good Wife, Once Upon a Time, and the film Space Jam, A New Legacy with LeBron James, y'all! LeBron James! And now, she is the first Black female captain in Star Trek Discovery in its 55-year history. Welcome, Queen Saniqua. Hey, girl.
You the queen. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, queens adjust each other's crowns,
that's
right?
That's right.
And right now, let me tell you something, and I'm going to let everybody know this. This is actually our second time doing this taping, because the very first time I ran into some computer glitches, and y'all know with Zoom and all of that stuff, but this queen, I thank her from the bottom of my heart, said, girl, I got you. I'll come back. So yes. I thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. But since our first time that where things didn't work, you've been everywhere. Okay. Every time I turned on the TV, I was like, Lord, are you trying to rub this queen in my face? Like, you better talk to this queen, because this queen is doing things, okay?
That means so much coming from you. And it's my honor and my pleasure. I was more than happy to even, you know, be sitting with you, talking to you in the first place. And so it was absolutely nothing. Thank you for having me and for being who you are, because I'm here because of you. You're a big part of it.
So yeah. Let me tell you something. Now that you said that, and I'm going to pass this torch on to you, because I was very blessed that I had an opportunity to interview Pam Grier, who was my idol.
Right.
I did a show for BET where it was called Legacies. And it was like, you got to interview whoever was a legend to you.
Yes.
I could barely make it through the interview. I cried the whole time. And I was honored. And just how you were, like, the fact that I'm talking to you to Pam Grier was amazing. Okay.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. Pam, I asked her, she said, baby, why are you so emotional? And I said, because, I mean, you're someone that I grew up watching. You're a legend. And she said, I said, and I thank you for your kindness. And she says, it's what I'm supposed to do. And I pass the torch on to you that you are supposed to do that for the next generation that's coming behind you, Vivica. And I've never forgotten that. So this is me giving you your flowers and passing the torch on to you. Okay. Hold on. Come on now. We got to make it through this interview. We just started now. Okay. But just so you know that it's what we're supposed to do. Okay. All right. God is good.
He is good all the time.
So this is beautiful.
Thank you for that.
This is what we are supposed to do as African-American queens.
That's
always
right.
Love each other. Keep the legacy continuing. And
that's
you're
right.
Doing big things, and I'm proud of you. But all right, pull it together. Pull it together.
Here we go.
Boosa.
Pull these chairs back in. I'm going to pull these chairs back
and
in.
And hold on to the lashes, all right?
All right. Thank you.
I love it.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let's talk about you and where you're from, because this is what Hustling with Vivica Fox is all about, is that I love celebrating careers and letting people know the journey, that how you have come to this point. So this is about your celebration and your journey. So let's start. Where are you from? Where are you from, girlfriend?
Oh, my goodness, honey. I'm from Alabama. From the deep, dirty South.
I love it.
And I was born there, obviously raised there. And then I went to school there as well. I went to the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, and got my theater degree.
Oh, wait, what's that? Because I don't want to do the wrong hand signal. What's Roll Tide?
Oh, man, we don't really have
Oh, they don't do the signal.
Not really. Okay. I guess some people do, but...
The horns of the somebody. That's Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that
we mostly just we just colloquial, right?
Roll Tide.
Yes. And then I moved to New York right as soon as I graduated, and I was there for many years, and now I live in LA with my husband and my two kids. It's been such There was culture shock in the beginning. Absolutely. My accent
culture
was still,
shock from where? When you went
moving from Alabama to New York.
Yes.
Cause my accent was still really thick and I was very green and you know, naive and all that stuff, right? But New York really whipped me into shape as it does.
It will.
It will do that.
I know what that's like to go from, I was living in Huntington Beach and moved to New York. And I told my mama, oh Lord, Jesus, I think I gotta move to hell. I was literally living in Hell's Kitchen. So I get it.
Yes. And then you go through that transition period and then you kind of get used to it and you really start feeding on the richness of the city. And I mean, it made me it grew me up and it grew my artistry as well. And I was still living in New York when Walking Dead came along. Of course, there were other things before that, but that was like the big, big, big pop off.
Right.
After this film I did was at Sundance. Then it was Walking Dead, the sort of tent poles, right? It was this film. Then it was, which was called Toe to Toe. And it was up against Precious at the time for the grand jury prize at Sundance of 2009. So that was the first sort of tent pole. And then Walking Dead was the second. And then around the time that I became a permanent, you know, like a regular on that show, we moved to LA. And then now it's, now it's been Star Trek Discovery, also Space Jam. And, you know, it's been a lot of franchises, a lot of sci-fi, which I was not planning for. I didn't expect, but God is just so kind and smart and strategic and gracious. Because I know everything I've been given. So I'm very, very grateful.
So now you kind of gave us the start and the end, but now let's fill in all of the version, all of the journey. Now you said that your hustle developed in Russellville, Alabama. Let's take a look back and see how your parents influenced you. Vera, your mama was Vera and your father's name was Charles, right? Your mama, Vera, was a skilled softball player and a champion bowler. Tell us about that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about them. Because you know, they were everything and they weren't perfect, but they were everything. And they've continued to be everything in my life. So, they were both champions in a lot of ways. My mother she showed me what a warrior looks like in real life. She really did, because that's exactly what she was. And yes, she was this athlete. And they were both champion bowlers as well. They're up on the wall in the bowling alley.
I love bowling.
And they used to just kill the game. And then she battled cancer. Oh my goodness. Three times. Actually really you could say four times, but she had colon cancer and breast cancer and stomach cancer. And she just kept surviving and she worked her, She worked her butt off. She was so generous and selfless. And then Daddy as well, like he taught me art. He taught me how to draw. He taught me about the beauty of art. He also was just so knowledge. He was such a knowledge Black man. And so he taught me a lot about Black history and about, you know, just the sort of identity of a Black person. And, you know, he had a lot of hurt that was kind of factored into all those conversations he would have with us.
Such as?
But like he was very, he was angry.
Mm. As and, a lot of Black men back then were, because they were always, you know,
always.
I heard that you said that your father, that they had to drink from the Black only fountain. The Black fountain.
Yes, my parents lived through, because they were a bit older. And so they lived through all of that. My mother's senior year of high school was the first year the school was integrated, 1969. Mm. And so they had that separation, because my dad lived in Mississippi and then he also lived in Arkansas. He spent some time in Michigan. And my mom was always in Alabama. So they both remember vividly going to, you know, the segregated areas and the designated areas for Black folks. They remember that and they were able to pass that on. And it's like what's the famous quote about, you know, to be Black in America and aware means you're always in a state of rage, you know? It was very much that. From what he had experienced, from what they both had experienced, and especially him, he was angry. Yeah. Mm. And
that's unfortunate. And so,
yeah, it was very, it was very unfortunate, very, very heartbreaking, actually. But he was also so intelligent and intellectual and taught us a lot.
I also heard the statement that you said that your father said that he couldn't look into the eye of a white man.
Yes, that was what he was taught as a child. I believe it was his grandfather that told him that. He said, "Don't you look a white man in the eye." So because my dad was born in 1943. So, you know, this is prime time, right? And they remember, there are still establishments in my hometown where they can remember having to not being able to go into the front door and having to go around the side. The theater in the downtown area of my hometown was segregated. They could only sit at the top. You know, this is like, these are my parents.
Real. Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, you know, this is where I come from. So I just have so much pride. And like I said, they weren't perfect, but now that they've both passed, because they both passed recently, one day apart from each other, actually, I can see the totality of their lives. I could see their lives from beginning to middle to end. And I just see them with a crystal clarity that I never had when they were still here. So I'm doing my best to work through all the shame and guilt of me sort of leading with my pain from the things that they didn't do right, even though they were doing their best.
I know.
I'm just now coming out of it, and you know, they're gone now, but they're obviously still here with me, but I'm sort of processing all of that just now.
I want to talk about two things. You said that they passed a day within one another. Were they still together when they passed?
Believe it or not, no. They got divorced. They actually divorced twice. They divorced once when we were sleeping out.
I'm divorcing you again. Okay?
Again.
You get on my nerves.
That's right. They divorced once when I was, you know, when me and my sister were kids, and then they got back together, they remarried, and then they divorced again. And so they weren't together anymore, but they were clearly, you know, they still had such a deep connection that you can't really speak to, right? That nobody can really understand except, you know, God and the two of them. But my dad passed of liver cancer on April 9th after a very short but valiant battle. And then my mom shockingly died the very next day of a heart attack.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it like receiving? I mean, talk about.
It was a horror film. It was a horror film. That's exactly
how'd you make it through that?
I'm still making it through. It's very interesting that a lot of these things are happening after they've gone. Cause you know, April, I guess it's been 8 months now or 9 months.
Oh, wow.
Ago.
Still fresh.
Yeah, still very fresh. And the grief is very confusing. Right. I'm sure you've, you know, you get, you
I
get
lost
to a
my
certain
father.
Point.
Yeah. I lost my father so 5 years ago, and there's still moments and days that I feel his presence, like his right. picture will all of a sudden come up on my phone. And you know what I do? I always go, "Hey daddy." I feel like that's his way of saying hi. You know, you know, or little moments will happen. You know, like I was just with my family for Thanksgiving, and all of us would be, y'all remember when daddy said, or daddy always said, like they'll always stay with you. And those gems, and that was the second thing that I wanted to talk to you about, that, you know, us as African-Americans that, you know, especially when, you know, your parents were older and lived through segregation, things like that we carry those scars and those wounds that we want to make sure we don't pass on to our children. We want right. to make them knowledgeable of what Black African Americans have went through, but we don't want to do the same things that we learned later. Mom and them did the best they could.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mom and them, like, you'd be like, why was you so mean? Or why was you this, that, and the third?
Right.
That when you have peace and forgiveness and acceptance in your heart, that you can say they did the best they can, but it's not up for me to repeat the same cycle.
Right. That is so, that's exactly right. That's wisdom.
Yeah.
That's wisdom right there.
Yeah.
And you have to practice that. You have to you have to come into the knowledge of it. You have to have the courage to accept that. And then you have to practice it. Right. And so I'm so new to it because I was led by hurt and trauma for so long, for too long. And I was so blinded and delusional about so many things. And it took that big, like, event of them both going at the same time to sort of like break the ground. And so that, like I said, there's so much clarity coming and I'm seeing how blind I was. And so I know that, you know, the Lord is really obviously walking me through it. And that forgiveness comes from healing. And I was kind of doing it backwards for a really long time. I was trying to sort of muscle the forgiveness, like muscle it, like force it, like, come on, I gotta do this. And it would dominate my life and dominate my thoughts. And my actions were not good. They just weren't.
Yes.
I did not hold up my end of the bargain, you know? And so now I'm like, oh, it's because I didn't open up enough to receive healing so that forgiveness could flow from it. Real, true. You know, I thought I was forgiving. I thought I was doing it, but I wasn't. I was at the surface and I didn't even know it, you know? So I'm so grateful because now I know, you know, I truly believe and know that they're in heaven and have been made perfect. And so now it's almost like a new opportunity for connection and relationship. Like you were saying with your dad, you know, I'm realizing that now. And it's so interesting to me that now things are happening the way they are, you know, with Space Jam, for instance, and then with being the first Black female captain to lead a Star Trek show and like making this kind of, or not really making this kind of history, but being cemented in history in this way. It's like, this is happening on the heels of their passing.
Yes.
And I just think that there's something really, I don't know, there's something really poignant about that.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to take it all in.
Embrace it.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about you carrying their legacy on through your art and through your family. Okay. So let's talk about how you got started. You graduated from the University of Alabama in 2007 with a degree in theater.
Yes, darling.
And then you got married. You married a fellow actor, Kenrick Green.
Yes.
Now tell us about that. You know, you went from being, you know, you graduated and then you went
and met
your husband, Kenrick, you were doing a play.
Yes. This is awesome. I just appreciate you knowing these things. Thank you.
We do our homework, honey.
Oh my goodness. I'm floored. I was on my own, like, you know, doing my thing and, you know, having a certain degree of success as an actor in the city and feeling myself. And I sort of would say all the time, Jesus is my husband and my career is my child. You know, that's what I would say. I'd be like, I don't want to be distracted. I'm focused, right here. And that's right. That hustle, right? That hustle. That you talk about. That's what it was. That's where I was. And then I did this play at the MacArthur Theater in Princeton, New Jersey. The legendary Ben Vereen was in the play as well.
I love Ben Vereen. Let me tell you something.
Dear.
When you're in the presence of Ben Vereen, it's like being in the presence of greatness.
I'm telling you.
Okay, of greatness. You just feel it. His you can energy, feel it. When he walks in a room, you're like, ooh, child, it's Ben Vereen.
Yeah, you know? It's like the air starts to crackle. Like you can feel it. It's like, ooh, wee. And like the way he carries it, like the way he carries like everyone who's come before him. It's like, you can feel it. You can feel the history, like, you know, on him, which is gorgeous. And he's such a...
What was the play that you guys were doing?
It was called Fetch Clay, Make Man.
What was that about?
It was written by Will Power, and it was directed by Des McAnuff, who was a two-time Tony winner, and it was about this unlikely friendship between Muhammad Ali and Stephen Fetchit that a lot of people, you know, don't know about. But they were really good friends, and apparently, and this is, you can see interviews where Muhammad Ali admits this, but he learned the one punch, like
his combination.
That famous photo where he's standing, you know, he's standing over and he's got his arm like this because it was one punch that knocked out Sonny
Liston.
Oh
my God. That's an iconic thing with him, like, got that.
Exactly. He says that he learned that punch from Stephen Fetchit. Wow. And Stephen Fetchit was this sort of, you know, he was treated like he was some sort of disgrace in the Black community because they sort of saw him as like, they were like, oh man, you and Uncle Tom, you cooning and all of that. And he, meanwhile, he was very true to himself as a Black man deep down, but he had to have a sort of public image that was in opposition to that. But yeah, but he and Muhammad Ali actually, you know, they developed a really lovely friendship. So I played Sonji Clay, who was, you know, back when he was Cassius, it was his first wife. And then Kenrick was a member of the Fruit of Islam Guard in the play as well. My husband. Yeah. So that's where we met. Obviously. I mean, I was swept up. I mean, I was just swept up.
Was it love at first sight?
It basically kind of was. It kind of was. It was, and it was very strong and very undeniable and very easy. And it was very fast as well because
I like that word that you just said.
It was easy.
Very easy. Because can I tell you something that I've had to learn, you know, about relationships and something that I want to pass on to our Black women?
Please.
That love is not supposed to hurt and it's not supposed to be hard. Mm-hmm. That if a man really loves you, really wants you,
right,
he gonna make it work and he gonna let it be known.
That's right. That is very, men do not do what they don't want
to
do.
Yes. And if you got to keep on fighting and keeps on being hard to love somebody, he ain't the one.
Yeah. It's very, and that's wisdom. That's wisdom right there. And
yeah.
We very much knew that it was as if we knew it as sure as we knew our names, right? When we were in the vicinity of each other and started spending time together, it was like, oh, we're going to get married, obviously.
Wow.
Like this is obvious that we are for each other. Like it's so obvious. And so we had a sort of tumultuous courtship that we actually want to write about because there were a lot of, because there was a lot of like spiritual disconnection at first and it kind of made it be like a push and pull situation. But once God sort of walked us through that, it was fast. So we met December 2009 and we were married December 2010. It was really fast.
Yes. Y'all worked through it because you both wanted it.
I'm telling you,
when you have that connection with someone, it's undeniable and you figure it out. And that's when you make sacrifices because you understand that to have a partner, it's a partnership and it's give and take, but it's not supposed to hurt and it's not supposed to be so damn difficult. Okay, that's right.
And once you get into it, once you get into marriage, it's like, or an otherwise committed relationship, that's when it's like, that's when the difficulty comes, but not because it's not that strained kind of hard. Mm. It's the hard that is like maturing, you know,
yes, it's
like,
exactly.
Like as you learn and grow together. That's when the hardships come, but they're necessary and you can feel it. You can feel that like, oh, this is hard right now because I need to get better. I need to grow in this area. Right. It's like, that's where it is. But what you're talking about, it's like, don't go against the grain. That's where it's not right.
Yes. Now I hear that you both are vegans.
You know what? We used to be, but we're not anymore.
She said we was vegan like back then, but all of a sudden somebody was like, look here, I need some protein in my life.
It didn't work for long. I mean, I appreciate it. Like everybody, you do what you do. I loved it. I love being plant-based. Like we never really wanted to say like vegan because apparently, you know, the full-on term includes other things as well, like clothing and products and stuff.
Yes.
So it was never that. It was only just, you know, plant-based eating. But we've incorporated meat back into our lifestyles. So we do still do a lot of, it's more plant-based than anything, but we do
very healthy.
I mean, when we're doing good.
I love it. Listen, I lead a very like kind of like vegetables and lean meat type of diet.
It works for me.
Some days that I'm like, baby, I need a little turkey, little chicken, little fish, little something in my life. You know,
especially coming after, especially right now after the holidays. Exactly.
You guys also have two beautiful kids.
We do. We have he'll be 7 in a few weeks, actually.
What's his name?
He's actually a second. So he's Kenrick Justin Green the second. So his nickname is Kate. His nickname is K2.
Okay.
And and then we have our daughter who was born. She's what you call a pandemic baby, because she was born July of 2020, honey. In lockdown.
July what?
19th.
Okay, she missed being a Leo. I'm July 30th. She's a Cancer, but I still love Pooka Bear. That's all right. She's still a July baby. She good with me.
I should have known you were a Leo because I love Leos. I'm an Aries, and Aries and
Leos
are like
mixed. Agreed.
That's right.
I love it.
So she was born. So she's a year and a half. And our son is almost 7, and you know, they're both kind of, you know, miracle babies in their own way. They're spectacular kids. They're sensational children on their own, right? Because you realize that as a parent as well, that, you are who you gonna be already. Like God made you the way you're gonna be. I just have to keep you on the track that was already divinely designed for you. I see, you know, it's like you learn that, or at least I've learned that a lot with the both of them. But they were miracle babies because with our son, you know, I haven't even really talked about this. I haven't talked about this at all actually in public, but I had the IUD, and God was like, that's cute. Here's my plan, you know,
you got pregnant when you had the IUD?
I sure did.
It was like, surprise, guess what? You're pregnant.
Wait a second. Right. And we didn't even know the good that God had in store for us with our children. Like we really didn't, because we weren't sure about, you know, having kids at all. And now we've seen that it was, And now we've seen God's best.
But at the time, was that because you both were working actors and you're like, careers are going great?
Yeah.
Kids later. And then God said, no, we can restart the family now.
Essentially. Yeah. Because we had a lot of wrong thoughts about it. Like we were very selfish at the time. We didn't know how big life can be. You know, we were kind of looking at it from a very, very narrow perspective. And so we thought like, oh, how in the world could all of these things work at the same time? And then that's what I mean when I say God was like, oh, I have my best waiting for you, and I will show you how you can do everything at the same time, you know, because our careers really took off after our kids. And we started traveling like crazy after our kids. It's like life got a lot bigger because of them. And we got a lot bigger inwardly as well. I would not be who I am without my kids.
I love to hear that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I would not be the woman I am. I would not. And so I'm so grateful for them. And then I'm just grateful that they happen to just be so awesome. But yeah, so then we didn't know if we would have another. And then we decided, like, okay, yeah, we do believe that this is what we should do. We think this is our path. We think this is God's will for us. And I had a very severe complication with her. I had a hematoma, and there was a lot of bleeding, and it was very scary. And we had to really hold on for dear life. For you know,
did you have to do bed rest?
I was supposed to.
that spirit in you was like, okay, come on, we're gonna get up and try it today. I got to move.
Yeah, but I tell you what, it wasn't even, it was kind of that, but not really, because I was in season. I was still shooting season 3 of my show, Star Trek Discovery. So we had to work it out with my doctor, and, you know, there were so many people that had to get involved, legal with the network and HR. And it was a big collaborative effort to make sure that I was safe and that my baby was safe, but that we were still able to get the show finished. And I was just trying to hurry up and get done so that I could get home so that I could rest for her and for me. And so anyway, it ended up working perfectly.
What did you name her again?
Soraya.
Soraya.
Soraya. Yeah.
Where'd you
Soraya
come up with that
Shantae
name?
Green. Thank you for asking.
Shantae. Go, Shantae.
Because that's my middle name.
I love it. Okay, we got some connection. Shantae from Two Can Play That Game.
Okay.
Okay.
Woo-hoo. I appreciate
Soraya
that.
Shantae, I love it.
I appreciate that. But Sarai is in Hebrew, at least. Uh-huh. Sarai means princess. And then
Shantae.
Yes. Yeah. Or Sarai. Okay. No. And then Yah is God. So we put them together. So, you know, so it's basically princess of God, Soraya.
I love it.
Thank you.
Now I want to go back to your husband again, because you guys didn't work together, not from the theater. Then y'all go and do The Walking Dead together.
That's right. And I mean, that's the dream, right? Is to be able to work together, because I have worked so hard for so long, and I'm away from my family so much because of it, that it is such a dream for us to be able to work together. And the funny thing is that he's still on the show, and he has now been on the show for longer than I was on the show. And I was on the show for 5 years, and so he's still on, and we actually were only in one scene together, and we didn't speak. We didn't speak to each other in that scene. It was a big group scene. Yes. And that's the only time Sasha and his character, Scott, were in the same place. So it's funny, because we were together, but we weren't really interacting with each other, you know? So we still have that dream on the prayer list, you know what I'm saying? Like to actually interact with each other on camera.
So now I want to tell you something that to me, you guys are truly a miracle, because honey, I have made it a rule not to date nobody in show business. I had one awful experience from dating someone, because I just feel like there's competition. So the fact that you met, it is. I mean, sometimes it's like, not everyone can handle, especially if one star shines brighter than the other or is rising at different times. Because I believe that everybody gets a turn. You could be hot today, cold tomorrow. He could be hot.
Right.
And it's this. So, I just never want that competition, because like I said, I had a bad experience personally. So the fact that you guys have not worked, not once, but twice together, had two children, are happy together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just find you guys to be a miracle couple to me. How have you guys been able to navigate career and family and be so happy and so successful?
Oof. Well, thank you for saying that. That's a really high compliment from you. You know,
you're welcome.
I would have said, you know, I'm digging into myself here lately because of all the reasons that I was saying earlier, all this clarity that's coming to me because of, on the heels of my parents and everything. So I'm in this level of authenticity that I've never been in before in my life. And I can say from this place, because maybe last year, if you had asked me that question, I would have said a bunch of stuff. I would have said, oh, it's because like, but let me tell you the truth. Right. You know, we speak the same language. We always make each other laugh. Like we're always playing. Like, you know, we value and respect each other. All that's true. Yes. But the real reason why is just Yeshua. It's just Jesus. Like, honestly, because as difficult, there have been such difficult times and like in our marriage, and we just keep our hands together in prayer, right? It's like, we just keep doing it. And we're not, sometimes we fall off. Sometimes we're not being as diligent as we should be. You know, cause what we've realized is that it's kind of like a triangle, right? And, you know, at least this is the way we see it. It's like, we're on like the two bottom ends of this triangle. And the only way to get closer together is to get closer to God. Cause God is at the top. Right.
Yes.
And that's so it's like, right. And so we're traveling up this triangle, you know what I mean? Getting closer and closer together while getting closer and closer to God. And there's no other way to do it. And so we've realized that over time too. We've realized that you can't muscle a happy marriage, at least for us. We can't muscle a happy marriage. Like we can't, it's like, it has to be connecting to the source. It has to be connecting to love itself.
Yes.
And that's the only way maturation in the marriage really happens. Right. So we've been privileged. We've been blessed. We've been really the grace of God has just been poured on us. And we realize that now we're about to celebrate 11 years. And
congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we're like, we get it now. Okay. Mm. We get it now. So we're very excited for the next, you know, 11 years or what have you, now that we really understand what's necessary here. And the fact that even though we have this like perfect matching of personality, senses of humor, artistry, like all of that stuff, it's all sort of like icing on the cake. It's like, that's not the substance. That's not the real substance. It's like the real substance is love itself. The real substance is God for us.
I love it. Okay, let's move forward. You made history, girlfriend, okay? As the first black female captain in Star Trek Discovery. I've been seeing you everywhere lately. I love it. Every time it comes up, I'm just like, duh! I mean, I've never actually seen so many African-American faces connected to Star Trek. I mean, the fact that they integrated and your presence and the way you speak is so clear and so commanding that every time I see you, you make me proud. I really do. But this is the first black female captain in the show's 55-year history. Okay? The fact that they went from none to like, boom, you know what I mean? To put a female and an African-American female in charge of that is amazing. How did that come about? Please tell us this journey.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, you know, Star Trek has always been innovative, right? From the very beginning, since the 60s. And, you know, we all have Michelle to thank for her. Yes. Like we really do. All of us black women in this business stand on her shoulders. We really do, because she dedicated her life to this, you know.
And let's tell our fans who we're talking about, Nichelle.
Nichelle Nichols.
Yes. Nichols.
Yes. She was Lieutenant Uhura in the original Star Trek.
Yes.
And you know, she was the first interracial kiss with William Shatner in television history.
Did they mind back then when they had that kiss?
I think they did. I think they probably did. I think the folks probably did. How could they not, right?
Right.
But that kind of progression is obviously necessary. But but even more than that, she dedicated her life, her free time, her energy, her wisdom, her heart to diversity. In specifically in NASA, right? And so what I love about that, what is there not to love about it? But what I really love about it is that she, Dr. King himself told her, you have got to stay. She wanted to leave. She wanted to go be on Broadway. She was a theater actor. She was like, I want to go back to Broadway. And he said, no. He was like, I am a Trekkie and it's the only show that I let my kids watch. It's the only show that I can watch with them. And Martin Luther King Jr. himself, Dr. King. And he said, you cannot leave. You cannot leave this show. We have to see you this way. You're the only one that we've ever seen who is in a position of authority, who's intelligent, who's commanding. We Black folks need to see you. You can't leave. And she was like, okay. And then not only that, she took it way further than that and started doing these initiatives with NASA. And she said, wait a second, we need more Black people. We need more women. Where is the color? Where is the variety? Where is the diversity here? Yes. And they said, oh, okay, Michelle, sure. But we don't know anybody Black. How about you recruit them? So then she recruited all these Black folks and all these women to be in NASA. And she's responsible. She's responsible for the first Black person in space, for the first woman in space, for the first Black woman in space. It's like, this is legit. It's like that art imitating life, but in this way, that art inspiring life, because here you have this story that's about all these brilliant, you know, geniuses in space, like with these explorative missions and all this like scientific discovery and whatnot. And she was doing the stuff in real life.
And isn't it amazing how we're finding out how many sisters was behind the, you know, folks' space travel?
That's
what I mean? Like Taraji's new movie that we found
hidden
out.
Hidden Figures,
you know,
that's right.
Yes, Hidden Figures.
That's
right. You know, sisters, that's why, you know, we try to make sure with the young girls, don't forget about, you know, just be educating yourself to do these things so that the legacy continues.
That's right. And so, you know, she started that. And then we have the legendary Whoopi Goldberg, who, you know, who was in Next Gen and really is such a fixture in the Star Trek franchise. And so speaking of legacy and everything, like this moment right now, you know, when I was blind and delusional, like I was talking about all these years, I would often see it kind of from a self-oriented place. And I would think like, oh, well, here I am. I've got to do all these things. I've got to do everything perfect. It's all on me. It's got to be on me. Everybody's counting on me. Everybody whose shoulders I stand on, they're counting on me. I gotta do this justice. I gotta make them proud. I gotta.
And so you did feel pressure. You did feel a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
But was that self-inflicted or?
Yes. 1000% self-inflicted and very much and the kind of debilitating pressure, like not good pressure, like pressure where I ended up what I was doing, and I didn't realize this. I thought I was being, you know, I thought I was being of honor or trying to be honorable or have integrity or whatever. But what it really was just me being focused on self. It's like, that's what it really was. Cause it was like, I got to do this and I got to do that. And I need to do this and I need to do that. And it's like, there are too many eyes here.
I know that's right. And there's no I in team, but there is in win.
That's true. And there's no I in legacy either, right?
Yes, at all.
And so that's what I'm learning now is in this new place of authenticity. This is where it all comes together, because I'm learning that what you said at the very beginning about the passing of the baton, the giving of the flowers to the next person. And so I had the privilege and the honor. I can't believe I got through it without crying. I was on The View just a couple of weeks ago, and I got to tell her face. I got to tell her to her face, like, this is not my accomplishment right now. This is your accomplishment. And I feel the same way.
I was so proud.
Thank you. And I feel the same way about you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is, I stand on all of your shoulders and I am your accomplishment. And now I get it. And now I'm like, so that's what I have to do moving forward, is take that eye out and do what I have to do to just keep building the yellow brick road going. Right.
Yes.
So that the person after me can take it.
When did you get the news that you were going to be captain?
Oh my goodness. Well, I knew it from the very beginning.
It was always
a journey to the chair. That's what the show was already. Huh. Yeah. It was built in. We didn't know when exactly it would happen, but I think it happened at the perfect moment. I really do.
Okay, but when you finally got it, they were like, okay, here it come. And you opened up that script and saw
it was quite a moment. It was quite a moment. And one of our executive producers and directors, Alatunde Ashinsanmi, he was, you know, he's such a huge, everybody in the company is amazing. I have to say the writers, the producers, the cast and the crew. And so it was a big moment when I finally sat down in that chair in the season finale of season three. And he really poured all of his heart into it. All the crew and the cast, we poured our heart into it because we knew what it meant. And there were a lot of tears, a lot of sleepless nights leading up to it. Cause it was like, oh my gosh, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. This is such a big deal.
Here we go. Right.
That's right.
I've got some rapid fire questions that I want to throw at you.
I'll be
fast. I just want one word. It's okay. It's just, I want people. You're just wonderful. You just really are. You are from your parents, from Alabama to their journey to passing it on. And now you, this is all beautiful. And the fact that this is two African-American women who are, you know, throwing flowers at each other is beautiful.
Right.
So I just, you know what I mean? We just throwing flowers at each other.
We are.
All right. Okay. So here's my rapid fire question. I just want you to answer one question. How do you stay focused?
I stay focused. I think by prioritizing things that are attached to purpose as much as I can.
How do you prepare as an actress to be captain on Star Trek Discovery?
Oh man, I try to dive into the imagined world of the story as much as I possibly can. I make it as specific as I can so that I can jump off that cliff and suspend my own disbelief. It's like, that's the way.
Okay. How do you navigate in this industry, in these uncertain times, like with us dealing with COVID, you know, how do you navigate in the industry?
I do my best to not entertain worry or doubt or fear, which is really, really hard. I'm not saying I'm really good, you know what I'm saying?
I agree with you. I agree.
Like, let me not fake the funk. Like, let me keep it 100. It is very hard to do. But I just know that everything that has come to me is from God, and everything that will come will be from Him as well. So I just Him and her, right? Because hey, God is both. So I just focus on that. I focus on the fact that my path is laid out for me, and I just need to walk it.
How do you keep your hustle fresh?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think you got to keep injecting joy. Like, it, without joy,
yes,
there is no
I
hustle.
I agree. You must learn to enjoy this.
You
got to
keep
that,
the
that
joy.
It took me years. I mean, I've been doing this for over three decades, and I finally enjoy the ride.
Yes, because if you don't have your joy, then you're just running yourself into the ground, and you're not actually hustling. Now you're just like now it's just masochistic. You're just hurting yourself actually, and you're gonna pay for it. And so yes, it's like, where is the joy? Where is the joy? That's where I need to be. Like, where is the joy inside, and then where is the joy externally? That's where I need to be. You know.
And now to wrap it up and to bring it back to your parents and their legacy. And the many gifts that they have passed on to you. Do know that those gems, they did pass on to you, Queen. What would you say to someone that is navigating through grief right now?
Sorry, that got me, what you said.
That's okay, baby. I'm right here with you because I know what that's like, because I miss my daddy every day. I miss the calls. I miss the hugs. I miss the smiles, and it's been 5 years, so that'll never leave you. But when just know that, be grateful of those moments. Just know that he's so damn proud of you. You are making history. Everything that he could not do, his baby girl is doing. Okay. So just know that. Okay. Know that from one daddy's girl to another, he's proud of you, baby. And he sees those moments, and he's, trust me, you know, and I didn't mean to make you cry. I really didn't. And I didn't want to cry with you, but I'm a daddy.
It's okay. That's right.
But you know, this is part of the process, but
that's right.
You know, pass that on. Ah, look, we got to hold it together. I thought we was going to make it through this without crying.
We were too. No, I needed to hear that. I thank you so much. I needed to hear that. Yes. I needed to hear that. And I will carry them.
Yes, please do. But how would you just give, you know, a little last word of knowledge to those that are dealing with grief right now? Just word of how they can get through it.
I would say, I mean, you just have to, you have to become very comfortable with it. You have to, I mean, which of course grief is torturous. So that seems like I'm saying something, I don't know, but it, you have to know that it is going to be with you and you have to let it pass. You have to let it pass through you. You have to give every moment its due. You have to let it come, because if you push it away or if you deny it or if you close yourself off to it, it just makes it worse. So you have to feel every moment. Every moment is going to be, things are going to be weird and confusing. You're not going to be able to plan it or predict it. So you just have to let it come through you, and then, and it will change you for the better. It really will. It can be cleansing. Grief can be cleansing. And I didn't know that that was the truth, but it is. It'll be, it makes you, it turns you into more of the person you're meant to be. And I'm realizing that now.
You discovered that through,
you know, now discovering that, literally, Vivica, in the last few weeks.
I love that.
I'm just now discovering that. Yeah. So thank you for saying that. I carry them with me because I will be looking for opportunities to do that, all the opportunities that I can find. And I would say that too, to people, look for all the opportunities you can find to manifest them as you keep going. And I'm going to be doing the same. And thank you for having me and for that word, really, Vivica. You don't even know how deep that just like got into my heart, and I needed to hear it. And I thank you. And
you're
I also
welcome,
thank
queen.
You for your performance on Set It Off, because it really helped. It really helped. It helped me as an actor.
Yes, honey.
I said, flam, 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 I want to be that.
So. I love it. I love it. Well, you know, let me tell you something. I discovered a whole lot of moments while doing Set It Off. And I'm grateful for the director and for my co-stars, Queen Latifah, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Kimberly Elise, that we discovered all of these amazing moments together. And, you know, but listen, that leads us perfectly into today's hustle hack. Today's hustle hack is hashtag Star Trek Discovery. Darlings, you may feel that it's too late to accomplish your goals or to reach the number one spot in your field, but it's not. Got to keep on trying, just like Sonequa. You can carry on your family's legacy and turn it into magic. If you need help, don't be afraid to ask. If you need support, find someone, because baby, a closed mouth will never get fed, and it will never make it all the way to the top. And I just want to say, you can do whatever you want, but you have to open the doors to success. You can't sit back and wait for success to come your way. Like both of us, I left Indianapolis. She left Alabama. We both actually went through New York, and now we're here in LA. And we are both successful queens here to pass on the torch to other actresses. You can do it, darlings, but do the work. I want to thank my beautiful, beautiful queen, Sonequa, for being on the show. Tell folks where they can find you on social media.
Oh my goodness. Well, you can find me on Instagram at the Real Sonequa, and Star Trek Discovery is on Paramount Plus here in the States. Absolutely. Yeah.
All righty. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your journey, your family legacy, your beautiful children, for letting us get to know you a little bit better. Keep on making history, queen. Okay.
Thank you, queen.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, friends, you know, you can follow your girl at Miss Vivica Fox on Twitter, at Miss V Fox on Instagram. I'm verified. And follow at Stage29 Podcast too. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, review, download to Hustlin' with Vivica A. Fox. Until next time, darlings, bye for now.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kelts is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horenigay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
The Hustling with Vivica A. Fox podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during the podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professional.